Session number 9535, Reel 1.
Mr. George Cole, Reel 1. Could you tell me something about your background before the First World War, Mr. Cole?
Well, I left school when I was 14.
No, but before that, when you were born?
My father and mother, I understand, of depression, and they came from Yorkshire up into Seam to work. And
how old would you be then?
I would be about 4 years old, as near as I could see. And I remember one of the things that struck me was coming in the train from Sunderland to Seam. It was a rough day, and I could see the white on the waves. And that was my first remembrance about coming to see him. And we went to stop up at the High Curry, what do you call the High Curry? Some friends or relatives of father, we were staying with them. And eventually I started school.
And do you remember the name of the school?
The school was the Ropey School, the same. You have to walk a good way to it, see. And I was at the same school right up when I was 14 years old.
What sort of education did you get there? Can you remember much about it?
Well, I couldn't say it was learned to read and write and geography. And I was good at geography. And in fact, for our sake, I was fairly good at them all, see. And because the headmaster of the school, Mr. Osper, he even started writing to me when I was in France during the war. Kept me in touch with him during the war. And got nothing but to call the education same as the kiddies get at the present time now, see. All they can learn to read and write and count, I think that was the main thing.
Did you do anything like the Boy Scouts or the Church Lads Brigade?
No, I remember when the Boy Scouts started the same, and out in England they joined the Boy Scouts, but my father wouldn't let us join, I says, and the reason he says they'll only need to be soldiers. And I've laughed many times that he wouldn't let me join the Boy Scouts, but I got in the army and went through the war. And it was laughable that, and I says, there's one chap, he was one of the ringleaders of the Boy Scouts, found out after Mr. Sandell. And he joined up after a while, but he never got out of England. So I says, joining the Boy Scouts didn't make much difference whether you were a soldier or not.
Did a lot of people think that the Boy Scouts were a training for the army at that time?
Well, I wouldn't say the thought. My father did, and I believe some of the older people at that England that it was putting the army spirit into you, I say. But he wouldn't let me join the Boy Scouts for that reason. But anyway, it didn't stop us getting in the army.
What about the Church Lads Brigade? Did you ever?
No, I never joined. I didn't join them. The only army I joined was the Salvation Army when I was a kid. And I was the Salvation Army as a kid, you see. And in fact, there's one time during the war, rather strange. We one time with a band, the Salvation Band, drum and fife band, we went to Blythe for the weekend. And we stayed with Salvation Army people, but then came over here and ordered out there. But during the war, when we were at S3's on the Perone front, I got a carbuncle on the back of my neck, and I'd come down the line and go and have it lanced. And when I come back to the horse lines, there was a reinforcement that came, and I was tipping in with him in his big shack. And eventually we got on talk, and he belonged Blythe. Oh, I says, that's funny. I says, I was Blythe one time. He says, I can remember, he says, the Salvation Army drum and fife band came to Blythe. I says, can you remember? He says, yes. He says, in fact, he says, the two of the lads were staying with us, they belonged to the band. Oh, yeah. I says, do you know the names of them? He said, I couldn't say, but he said, I can remember the two brothers. So I says, oh, I says, that's funny. So I says, you sure you didn't know the names? He says, no. So I took my mind back. I says, Did you have electric light in your house? Because that was something uncommon in them days, eh? He says, yes. So I was raking my mind up. I says, did they call your old brother-in-law, Jack McGregor? And he turned around and gave me such a look. I says, have you had a brother-in-law called Jack McGregor? He says, that's what they call me, brother-in-law. Well, I said, them two lads wasn't stopping with you. I was just stopping upstairs with Jack McGregor and his wife. That was your sister. And you were stopping with your mother downstairs in the same big house. And we'd come to the, were in the same house and met in that dugout on front, on the perron front. And he wrote to his mother and told her, and we kept in touch right up until I was took prisoner, and we lost touch altogether, see.
What did your dad do for a living?
My father was a courier, he worked on the pit all his life, see. And eventually, after I joined up in the war, the courtyard was bad in Denham on account of the submarines and the Al Seago and say. So they went back to Yorkshire, and I was left. When I came back, of course, I went to Barnsley on leave, and that was finished with Barnsley. Couldn't pay for lodgings.
When you left school, was there any? What did you want to do when you left school? You left at 14.
I left school at 14. I left on the tea time about 4 o'clock. I had a drink of tea with my dad, and I went up the same quarry. It's about a mile and a half away, and I was signed on. And I went down the pit the next morning, 5:10 the next morning, I was down the pit. And I was down the pit all that time until I joined up in 1915.
Can we talk about some of the jobs you had down the pit? What was your first job?
The first job down the pit was trapping. There was a junction there, and the driver's lads, there was a land where the sets used to put. The set used to only 65 tubes on, and there was control of the engine at the shaft. And anyway, I was just on this switch when they were going north or going south. And I knew one lad driving north, calling Peter Happenby, eh? And there was another chap driving south, eh? And when they come down the land, he used to shout north, south, eh? And anyway, I got to know the names. So is that Peter? He says, yes. And I put the switch for north. But unknown to me, they call this man Peter Hanlon. And he was driving south. And he got his legs nipped with the pony limb, see. He wasn't injured very much, see. But the rather him out, they called them both Peter. So then later on, they used to gradually walk your father in by. That's father towards the fear, see. And I remember I was driving up there one time, and
you became a pony driver then?
Pony driver.
What did that involve exactly?
If I...
What exactly did that job involve?
The courier, the whole system then, or the courier, that's the man that you had the coal, and filled it in the tubes. There were 800 weight tubes. And they were changed. They put one tub at a time. He used to take the full tube out, come back with empty one, and whatever the gradient that was, the drivers used to drive from there to a landing, 3 or 2 or 4, depending on the gradient, to see how the pony. And there's one particular time, there was a lad you sent on to couple your tubes on, and he wasn't there, so I was coupling my own tubes on. There was an agreement. I was supposed to get 3 pence a day extra for doing that job, see? And when I got my note, pay note on a Thursday, I noticed that my money wasn't in, my 3 pences. So I said, Overman, I says, hey, I says, yeah, you've missed my flat money out. That's what they call it, flat money, see? Oh, he says, run away, he says, I can't be bothered with you. I says, listen, I says, I did my flat, I says, I want the pay. You used to get your pay note on a Thursday, that's the day before the actual payday, see. So anyway, when I went down the pit, I told the one man in charge of the kind of one-way man, Alfie Payton was his name. I says, he hasn't put my flat money in, so I says, I'm not going to flat. He says, well, I'll put you on the book. I said, oh, well, I said, no, don't. I said, you're not bother with. So anyway, I was taking two or three tours in and fetching one out. And anyway, it upset all the road in the pit. And I had to chuck held up. And my father was calling on at the same flat. And the deputy, old Tadjum Bell, he said, well, tell me dad about it. He said, oh, well, he says, he asked what was the matter. And he says, he's playing what about his flat money. So, oh, well, let him fight his own battles, he says. So anyway, the old man come in, wanting out with the matter, saying, I tell him. And there was a war on. And anyway, the putters, they were backing me up because I was sticking up to principles, eh? And then he said, yes, well, never mind, get on. And he says, and I'll pay you flat. I says, what about the back money? I says, right, who are you? And the witness, the putters went. And that was the first time I ever had a strike, 14-year-old, for 3 hours a day. Because my dad told me when I got my first pay note, asked how much I had, and this, that, and he explained how it was worked out. And he said, if you have any money, Sean, get away there. And he taught me to fight my own battles right from the start. And gradually I progressed. I got another job, what's called a big money job. Got shifted out in the shaft, and 6 months of the extra. And then there was different jobs at the shaft, eh? And I was on one of the car run round. That was getting the sets in and out of the shaft, like traffic manager, say. And I was doing that right up till the war started. Then, why I was only 18, 17 year old when the war started.
Before we go on that, was the union, you mentioned you've fighting your own disputes down the pit, you know, uh-huh. for your pay. Was the union very powerful in those days?
The union, I hadn't took it to the union then, see. I was trying to find out first before going to the union, see, which is the proper way, see. And if it hadn't been settled properly, the way the woman, see, he had to settle because he had enough witnesses against him that I was entitled, see. But it would have gone to the union, see. But I was also believing that, trying to get put right before fetching the union in, sir.
Well, did outside of the mine, so to speak, did you see that the war was coming in 1914? Were you expecting a war?
No. I cannot. Though, it's funny, before the war, we had boats coming in here into Siam for coal. French boats, Belgian boats, German boats, Norwegian boats. In fact, three of the main boats, there were Saubers, a German firm. They used to come here for coal. And it's funny, there was always the talk about German spies. Now, as if somebody was building it up, you know, say. Oh, yes, I now think about that.
This is before the war there was talk about,
yeah. Before the war, yes, before the war.
What did they think they were doing?
Well, it seemed funny. I've often quoted that at the present time, no, everybody does think the Russian spies, see. And before the 1940s, even more, thrillers, what used to buy, they were all German spies, see, before the 1914 war. And the books we used to buy, boys' books, read. Many Russian spies in them days, they were all German spies, see. And it was just built up in them days, just as the empties now.
What did you feel about the Germans, the ones you met in Siam?
If
you
I think as kiddies, like, we never, you couldn't understand it, like, say, because the Germans we met in the place and the Frenchmen, they were all right, they seemed just normal. I remember one time at the bottom of Church Street, there was a little, it was a hairdresser and newspaper shop, and they stole foreigners, we used to call them all foreigners, but we've got to know the different nationalities, you know, as lads. And I was always interested in them. And a couple of us at the Bournemouth Church Street, and they still foreigners coming over and they start talking about. And I kept saying, what? What? We hadn't learned to say a pardon then, see. And eventually I told them, correspondence, Papia. I said, what? He says, correspondence, Papia. And my mate was laughing. I said, shut up, I said. So I went through the motion writing, correspondence. I went through the motion of writing, and they noticed it. Right over, I says, come on. So I took them up to the Foggins shop where the South are, such like, see? The shop's still there, same yet. I says, Mr. Foggins, I says, these two chaps here, I think they want some writing paper. Oh, he says, so I pulled a packet out. Wee, say that's fresh. And anyway, that's where I got the envelopes. And they were asking me in there, we how much. Well, I know it's called my hand, see? But didn't tumble to that then, see? And I remember the Frenchman got his handful of money out, English money out. And I took the money out of his hand to pay Mr. Fung and the correct money. And then he motioned to me, tax on me out of his hand for myself. So I feels I took a halfpenny out, I says I was well rewarded. And that's what he wanted. And though the foreigners to me, they were just the same as old fellows.
Can you remember anything about when war was actually?
Yes, I remember it. I was away at Sunland. It was August Bank of the Monday. And it's same, he used to have a big flower show. Always on the August Bank of the Monday. And anyway, I'd been to Sunland as a lad, a bit pocket money, say, 17 years old. And I come back to the old room and somebody said war had been declared. Why, well, couldn't realise what war was, see. And then I got home and got on talking about the war with Germany. And the people knew it was Germany. They were reading the papers building up, see. And that was it, see. Just another day, see.
You didn't think you'd be involved?
But before the war, rather amazing, before the war, the territorials, it's same. They went to Wales for the annual camp. And the time they were at Wales, on a Sunday, before they went to Wales, I was going to work on a Sunday morning for the extra shift. You have to get extra shift. You're keen for coppers then, say. And I was going to the Corrie Road, and the territorials was marching up the road to hand train to go to Landudno at the camp. The guns and horses had gone before now, see. And some of these, there was, I'd work normally in the pit with me, see. The chap and me were going to the pit where they were going away for the fortnight's hold at the camp, see. And anyway, I went, and the time they were at camp, the war broke out, and they were mobilised, see. And they were in the army, territorial day, and I hadn't the foggiest idea he was going in the army, but I beat some of them to France. And I went to France and joined the body, but some of them didn't even get to France, never went, see.
When the outbreak of war sort of settled in and the war actually started, what did you and the people around you think of the war? You know, this is during 1914 as the battle started.
Well, we used to see pictures and photos, you know, and then all the talk was that we finished with Christmas, you know, we'd be all over with Christmas and this, that, and that. And, of course, 17 years old, why, I never give it a thought about what was going to happen, you know, see. And then there was different ones joining up, and other ones joining up, and this, that, and that, see.
Did it affect the workings of the pit? Did they lose many men to the war? Did they start going off?
When the war started, there were a lot in the territory, of course, they were in the army, see, and they started joining up and enlisting. And at one time, Sam Corrie had the record for the number of men, percentage, in the forces. The same way, see. And the memorial, did you say that memorial at the park? There's a memorial at the park, there's, 200 men's names, all over the place. In fact, there was that many enlisted that the clothes wanted to tow the seams down. There wasn't enough men to work them. It's the same quarry, you see.
So it did affect the work into the pit?
The manpower went out the pit, see. And,
how did that affect working down there? Did it make any
difference? It meant that the boss closed the seams down and switched the men. See, those men went on different seams and enlisted, see. Why, to make the pit worthwhile, they had to switch them all into their one area, say, and close the other ones down, say.
So you worked just the same, it's just there weren't as many seams, so...
No, they didn't work as many seams, see? They weren't the same. That's the one I was in. That was closed all together. And it was never opened out till after the war. And I was in when it opened out again after the war.
How else did the war affect life in the mine and seam during that first year before you joined up?
Well, I couldn't say it happened very much because there was only a month ago when I was away out in the army to miss it, see? But, of course, I couldn't say how it affected them in my life because I wasn't there, you know, see.
Now, when did you join up?
In the new year, I was 18 in November. And then in the new year, I saw this one joining up, and that one joining up, another one joining up. So off I went and joined up on the 28th of January, see.
That was your reason for joining up, was it, that most other people...
We say this one over here and the other one over here. And I think one of the things that was seen at posts, I've often said about, you used to have these different posters, you know, see. And I can say one, I'll say it now, there's a fellow lying wounded, and the other one stand up there with his bandage on his head, and the one of them, and the words was, "Will they never come?" So I joined up there, and the remarkable thing was that when I went to join up, the man was recruiting in the recruiting office, Joe Newby. He was killed in the war, and his name's the last one on the war memorial in the park up there. And Joe Newby, he only lived about 5 or 6 doors from where I was living at home. So he looked at me when I went in, he says, "Well, now your name." I said, "Yes, I know where you live." So he put that down. He says, "Are you 19? I says, "Yes." He says, "Are you 19? I says, "Yes." Well, he said, "Oh, now you're telling a lie, but you should be a sinner." And he knew I wasn't 19, but he put it down. I said I was 19, and he put it down, and I was joined up.
Did you have a medical inspection or any
other?
Yes,
and we had a medical inspection. I remember the man, it was Dr. Todd, and why it was, can you read C and here and so on, so on. It was, wasn't much of an inspection, say. And then...
Where did all this take place?
In St. Arbor, in the drill hall, say. We joined up with St. Arbor drill hall, say. And then we got inoculated. And we got, 24 hours left for being inoculated, say. But we'll still in the dorm and go on there practicing. We had no uniforms.
What did your parents think of you
joining? Oh, they played war about it, but it was doing that, say. If they had done it, they could have claimed us out. We're not being of age, say. But I never thought I just went out. They went and shouted, say. And
why didn't your parents? Why did they object?
Well, I think myself, they objected because they thought that, well, they are that you've gone there to plant a piece or something like that, you know. Because I think myself, all the people of the world, they're all again war. And anyway, in a while, we'll see them. They start getting maybe a pair of trousers and then a tunic, and eventually we got rigged out, see.
What were you doing while you were at sea and travelling back?
Oh, just, we used to go in the morning, and used to go there on the morning, and I remember the practicing with a dummy gun made. It was like 4 cartwheels. And I read it up to imitate the gun. It was a tray trunk for the barrel. And they did it in the wagon shops, made it in the wagon shops. And we used to practice with drag ropes, going in action, and without drag ropes, and this not advance and retire. The thing that sent us on there was never used down never used down there during the war. And then we used to go on rope marches, walking around the place.
How had you come to join the artillery? Had you chosen the artillery?
They were all joined out, more or less the artillery there, but there was others joining other regiments, Tyneside Irish, Tyneside Scottish, and such like.
But the drill hall?
The drill hall was the artillery, say.
Did you want to be in the artillery?
It was just a matter of luck, say. If they'd been the infantry, I'd be in the infantry, say. But anyway, I joined the artillery with them. And
what was this unit called, roughly speaking?
Well, I can't remember we had any particular name, because we were little stopping at home, say, for a few weeks, then we got drifted to Lawfell, Gateshead.
And you were going to be the 3rd Northumberland...
3rd Northumberland Brigade, that's what they're really in, say.
And so you were at sea him how long before you went to Gates?
Oh, we were only at sea him a few weeks, and then we were drafted to Gateshead. I went into Whitehall Road Schools, and all they were doing, they were marching about. There was nothing to, no equipment to drill with, say, no rifles, no nothing.
So you did mainly drill? Just drill?
Just drilling and marching and drilling, form fours and such as that, and getting your groove. And I remember one time, before the Sorese raid, the night before, I took a message up about an hour, and to Colonel Bradford. And when I was going through the trenches, I was challenged different times, you know, say. And I added the message to Colonel Bradford and came back again. Anyway, I come back to see him sent his again, challenged again, say. So one of them says, where are you from, mate? In Geordie Town, say. He says, where are you from, mate? Oh, I says, I belong to St. Arbor. Oh, I said, where do you belong? He said, I belong Gateshead. See? I said, dear. He said, I said, do you know where Whitehall Road School is? He said, I wish the hell I was there. No, he said, I used to go to that school when I was a kiddie. And met them two fellas, met that fellow interested. Because they were Durham's, they were all, the 50th Division was all North Country, bulk of North Country people, see?
What were conditions like in the school? What sort of accommodation and bedding did you have?
In a school, when I first went, there was nothing at all. Just lie on the bare floor, and cooking out in the yard, and someone sat on orders, peanut potatoes. I remember one time, the quartermaster, he coming over for the paint, he said, and he's painting too much off. Hey, he says, think on the more you peel off, the less you have to eat. And then eventually they got some dish blankets out to us. And then we got a little contraption. There was two rests, one at the top and one at the bottom. And you had three planks of wood. There, that was your bed. See?